Oh, man. Hey, buddy.
Love you. Have fun.
Well, it is good to be with my healthy friends. And if you've not been around Watermark very long, I'm going to explain to you why I say that. And I know that some of you guys are here and you maybe are walking in for the first time, and even some of the stuff we've already done seems weird. Wait, it's going to get weirder, all right? So just hang on. But it does seem strange, you know, when you first walk into a group like this, you're not sure what you're going to get. And the fact that you would even walk into a church and trust us is humbling to us. But let me tell you why I say these are the healthiest people that I get to hang around with all week. I do believe that here at Regen are healthy people. Now, I think that they're the healthiest people at Watermark. I don't think that this is the only place healthy people are. But if there are people that aren't here that are healthy, they're healthy because of the reason that you're here. What do I mean by that? There's an amazing verse in Isaiah chapter 57 and verse 15. And it says this, and I'm going to stop halfway through it, but I just want to read to you because it doesn't end the way it starts. Okay? And it doesn't go where you think it would go. In verse 57, 15, it says this, For thus says the high and exalted one, who lives forever, whose name is holy, I will dwell on a high and holy place. Now, so far, it sounds exactly like I think it should sound. I mean, that's who God is. I mean, he dwells in a high and holy place. He is the high and exalted one. And I'm all with that, but here's the crazy thing. The other thing, the next thing it says is, not just the high and holy one, it then also says, and also with the contrite and lowly of spirit. See, that's where God hangs out. He hangs out in a place that's beyond anything that any of us can imagine. In fact, it's so amazing that we couldn't even trust it when we were experiencing it. Not us personally, I'm talking about the human species. The human species could not believe that God was who he really was, even when he gave us evidence that he was who he was. He put us in a place that we call Edenic. It was paradise, and there was no lack of anything. We would be naked and unashamed, okay, with one another. There was no self-focus. There was no awareness of the fact that I need to impress you. All there was freedom because we were walking with God and enjoying him, but we just couldn't even hold on to the lie that was presented to us, which says, hey, man, this is all a front. God's just kind of numbing you with some kind of false reality. If you really knew the truth about God, you wouldn't want to follow him, and it's a lot better without him, and you don't need to listen to his word, and disobeying him is not that big a deal. And even though we had every evidence in the world to believe that, meaning human experience at the time, humans that were alive, we just chucked it. We just went, forget it. We're out of here. And we said, I think I'll be my own God. I think I'll choose my own way. I think I'll try and find life on my own. And fast forward, you know, from whenever that moment is in your understanding of Scripture to today. And we've got a pretty screwed up place because we keep trying to figure it out on our own. The Bible says that God is so good and so wonderful that you just can't even imagine his beauty. We have words and that try, but you know, holy isn't really an attribute. It just describes every other attribute. God is holy in his love. He's holy in his justice. He's holy in his grace. In other words, he's the perfect and complete fulfillment of everything that is beautiful and right and true and lovely. And I don't even know what that is. I can't get my mind around infinite. I just can't. And so I don't believe it often. And as a result of not believing that there is an infinite beauty and an infinite good and an infinite God, I try and become my own God and figure out my own way. And every time I do it, it doesn't work out so well for me. I mean, I have fleeting moments of success, but nothing that can sustain me. And by the grace of God, for me, I hit a place where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I became this other thing that by the grace of God is where he dwells. So I have never dwelt in like really in perfection and beauty and holiness. I've never dwelt there. I've had good moments in my life and there are things that I have done that everybody would say, that's a good thing. And there's lots of things that are really nasty, terrible, Hitler-like things that I haven't done. So I'm somewhere in the middle, but I'm not holy and beautiful and perfect where God is perfection. But what he has allowed me to see is that because I'm not with him, I'm broken. And this is the most amazing thing about God. He loves broken people because, you know why? Because he is holy in his love and his perfection and his grace. And so the people that aren't, when Jesus was here, in fact, Jesus, if you don't know what Jesus said about himself, he just said, man, I'm the visible image of the invisible God. If you want to know what God is like, check me out. Which is really interesting that Jesus said that, because I have the chance to talk to people from every kind of faith system in the world that's out there. I have friends that are Hindus and Buddhists. I have friends that are agnostic. I have friends that are even atheists. And it doesn't matter who I talk to, even atheists, okay, who have any kind of intellectual credence, they acknowledge that there is a historical figure named Jesus. A Buddha talks about Jesus. Muhammad said he was the greatest prophet. They all love Jesus. They all think well of Jesus, okay? And the reason people frankly reject Christendom is because they don't think that we look like this Jesus says that people who know him should look like, and the reason we don't is because we redefine him in our own way. But let me just get back to this. Jesus says, you wanna know what God looks like? Look at me. And one of the things you're gonna see when you look at Jesus is grace and love. Not snap to it. Not perform and get as close to where I dwell in holiness and perfection. He comes right out and he says something amazing. He says, look, here's the deal. If you wanna earn righteousness, that's cool. You could earn salvation if you could, but here's the standard, perfection. Be holy like I'm holy, which should immediately make you go, okay, I'm out, right? And here's the deal. Once you get sick and tired of being sick and tired and you realize that life as I know it and humankind has been trying to pursue it isn't working, eventually, if you're paying attention, you'll get to a place where you just go, I don't know what to do. This thing's so broke, I can't fix it. And you'll stop popping off about your next strategy and you'll just start to listen. And this is amazing. This is where God hangs out. When Jesus was here, this is what he said. No doubt, at one point he said, will you quote to me this proverb, physician, heal thyself. But he says, I'm not gonna heal myself because what I'm about to do in this moment is I'm gonna show you what love looks like. I'm gonna give myself to your sickness. I'm gonna lay my life down, but make no mistake, I'm laying it down. You're not taking it. And just so you know that I am in control, I'm gonna pick it back up again, and you can count the days till it happens, and it'll happen. And mark my word, you're gonna see me again, because even though I will not live in a physical presence for many years on earth, I'm gonna leave my spirit in people, and those people who really know me, not who talk about me, not who know the story, but people who really have a relationship with me, their lives are gonna be restored, their lives are gonna be powerfully transformed, and they're gonna be rescued, and they're gonna be evidence of who I am. And some of my hands and feet will still be here on work. Not everybody who calls himself followers of mine are followers of mine, but the ones that are followers of mine, you'll know them because they love one another. And they don't make each other perform and put useless religious laws over one another. They love one another and they point back to this thing that I'm going to for you, this cross. And Jesus says this, he goes, here's the deal. Let me tell you another little story about physicians. Physicians don't come for those that are healthy. I'm coming for those that are sick. The people that Jesus didn't help on earth are people that didn't think they needed help. And there were people that thought that their righteousness was enough, that they could hang out with God on his high and holy hill. And Jesus says this amazing thing. He says, listen, unless you're better than the Pharisees, which all they did was professionally obey the law and religious things that men do. He says, you gotta be better than that because that's just not gonna get it done. But you wanna be blessed? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Let me tell you why I think you're here tonight. It's not here because you're ready to turn in your resume. You're here tonight because a lot of you guys are ready to quit. And you're like, man, if there's a reason to not quit, if there's a place that I can find life, I wanna find it, man. And you've heard from somebody that a bunch of us have found life. And let me tell you why we found life, because we admitted we were sick. I was just with a bunch of friends that are part of the leadership of this ministry, and I started down a road that I forgot why I was going on it. And for those that were in the room, I will tell you now, it was because of something I said in that room with my friend, a friend who just died. He'd been sick with colon cancer for 5 years. And one of the things I talked about is the way that he lived those last 5 years was very different. And I just said, it's really an amazing thing that the people that can teach us the most about how to live are people that are dying. Right? Isn't that true? When people are dying, they're just not obsessed. Right? If I told you, and you were in Houston, and you had 6 feet of water in your house, but you knew you were going to be dying tomorrow, it's like, who cares, man? Go to 8 feet. I'm just going to go, I'm going to hang, I'm going to be with people, I'm going to love others, I'm going to do everything I can to comfort people for the next 12 to 24 hours I got on earth, and who cares about all this stuff? Right? People that know that they're dying are not going to waste their last $100 on the McGregor-Mayweather fight. Okay? They're going to figure out something better to do with that last few moments. They're not going to just get in a room and distract themselves with entertainment. They're not really that concerned with what they eat. They're really concerned with things that ultimately matter, man. Only those that are dying can teach us really how to live. And let me just tell you why this is the healthiest place at Watermark, is because a lot of us in here knew that the road that we were on was leading to death. And we got to a place where we realized that there was a God who maybe could show us the way of life. And so what we're trying to do is continually put to death the lies that controlled us. And when we do that, we're starting to live again. Here was the very first lie that we all bought. It was the lie that was first sold to our friends that lived in the perfection of God's evidence when they were told, hey man, you know why God doesn't want you to know good and evil? Because he doesn't want you to run from error against him. He knows that once you know about the tree of good and evil, you won't need him, man. Just, why don't you be your own God? Why don't you trust yourself? Can I tell you why God didn't want Adam and Eve to eat of the tree of good and evil? Because they're not eating of the tree of good and evil showed their dependence on him and their faith on him. And as long as they kept their eyes on him, the good one who gave every evidence that he was good, as long as they kept focused on him, they were going to live a good and beautiful life. But the second they go, no, we don't need God. We'll know what good and evil is on our own. They did. I think we know. Most of us know what is right and what is wrong, right? Don't we? And yet we keep doing the very thing we know is ultimately not going to work. We are like dogs that go to vomit and pigs that get washed up and go right back to the mud. And we swear we'll never do it again. And our problem isn't that we know it's mud. Our problem is that we just can't keep from going in the mud. And it's defined our lives. And so God just said, here's the deal, man, Todd. When you know good and evil, you won't always choose good because you're not intrinsically good. Your goodness and life is only going to come from your relationship with me. So when you say you don't need me, you're going to choose all kinds of things that are going to make you just sad. And because I love you, I don't want you to be sad. But here's the thing. When you finally get to a place when you just go, God, I'm sad. I mean, I'm really sad. I'm broken. I hate my life. I don't know what to do. If you look back to him, man, that's where he hangs out. He hangs out with the broken and the sad. And Jesus said, I'm here to help people who want to be helped. Some of you guys think that you're holy and blameless. Are you kidding me? You're adorning yourself with outward righteousness. You're rotten to the core. You can do all the religion you want. You know inside of you is deception and death and various lusts that you're enslaved to, that you protect. Right? I mean, I listen, we got to respect. I was just in New York a couple of weeks ago. You got to respect people that say they love their God enough that they're going to kill themselves by flying a jet. I mean, they sacrificed. They left their family. They came over here. They learned how to fly an airplane. They lied. They put their freedom at risk. And then ultimately, they put their life on the line and flew it smack into a building because they believed that was the way to love their God. I mean, say what you want about them. That's a true believer. You guys know what they did before they die? These holy men? They left their cachet of porn, went to strip clubs, got one last drink of flesh just in case they were wrong about their God, who they believed was going to give them the pleasure of 70 virgins. What a pitiful God that the best he can offer you is 70 women that'll be there at your beck and pleasure. That to me is not much of a God. God says, listen, I'm a whole lot better than, if all God can offer me in heaven is one long, really good time. Sounds like a weekend in Vegas. That's what it sounds like. And I'm just like, come on. I mean, I don't know. No, he says, I'm enough. And most of us are in this room because we've tried to find life apart from him with long weekends in Vegas and all that goes with it and stick in everything that happens there. And we're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so we just go, hey, Are you a physician? A divine one? I'm sick. I mean, I don't want the world to know I'm sick because I'm still trying. One of the things that I'm addicted to is the world thinking I'm not sick. And so I'm dying and I'm walking around not letting anybody know that I'm dying. And because of that, I can't get well, because even the people that know what to do with sick people, I pretend like I'm not sick around them. And man, my family knows I'm sick. And man, my soul knows I'm sick. And my sleeplessness tells me I'm sick. And a loving God just goes, come to me. And I'll rescue you. And I'll take your ashes and I'll make them beautiful. And so, man, this is what this is. This is what you walked into, all right? The only requirement to be a member of Jesus' family is you go, I don't deserve to be a member of Jesus' family, especially if he's good. And the truth is, the last family I was a part of, I screwed up, man. And you'll take me in, and maybe you'll even restore me so much that I can go back to the family that I'm screwing up, acknowledge that I screwed up, make all the amends that I can, and maybe even slowly rebuild those relationships, and maybe even be a source of grace to them, the one who ruined so much of their story. You can do that, God? Yeah. It's the God we serve. And so let me tell you what we're about to walk into. You know, as we hang out together, you know, I scribbled down here one line that I wanted to make sure I didn't forget. It's just, look, we are here to celebrate a God that rescues us, this God that is on this high holy hill, right? That is impervious from all the sufferings that are in this world. Praise God, that's not the only place he is. He's here for the hurting. And he wants to restore you and make provision for your sin so that you can meet his definition of holiness. And he wants to walk with you in the midst of this world so that while you're in this world, you can be evidence to people that there is a God that's come to deal with the hurting. But here's what I want you to hear. This is why we're going to work steps, okay? We use language that's familiar to a lot of people in recovery circles. But, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, right? I mean, this is really not about recovery. Because Satan doesn't care a lick whether you go through life stone cold sober or just a stuttering drunk. He just wants you to go through life believing that you're okay without God, either because you numb yourself from your pain or you live in some righteousness that's better than other people when you're not righteous at all. Recovery is something that happens one time, okay? I mean, I should say it this way. Forgive me, I didn't mean to say that. What I meant to say is rescue. Rescue is something that happens once. And by the way, the only people that are getting rescued in Houston are the folks that are on top of the roofs going, rescue me. All right? This is beyond my ability. Rescue me. Those are the ones that are getting rescued. But rescue while it happens one time when you acknowledge you're in a place of distress. Recovery is something that takes a lifetime. And what I thought I would do, Jesus did this. Jesus told a lot of stories, and stories were a great way to connect. I'll tell you one story that he told, and then one story from my life, and then we're going to wrap it up and let you guys tell each other your story and remind each other of the story of the gospel that will set you free. Jesus tells a story about two guys that kind of went to the temple area to pray, and one man was pretty proud of himself. And said, God, I'm so glad I'm not like that wicked guy I see over there who hangs his head in shame and is guilty of all that I know is not good. I thank you that in my righteousness I can come stand here before you and tell you how good I am and that I don't defame your name with the way that I live. And that other guy that he was pointing to, just all he could muster up was, oh, God, have mercy on me. Because I am not worthy of a relationship with you. And Jesus says, which one of those two do you think the holy God was impressed with? The God who is wholly merciful, the guy who thought he had a resume worth submitting, or the guy that goes, I got my nothing? And Jesus says, I'll tell you, that's the one that's forgiven, because that's where I hang out. This guy thinks he can walk and look me eye to eye. That guy doesn't even make it past a blade of grass to me. That's the guy I rescue. That's why you're the healthiest people here. Some of you guys aren't rescued yet, but you're healthy enough to know that maybe you ought to go here and listen. But there's got to be a moment when you wave your hand and go, I want Jesus to rescue me. And we're not going to love you anymore. We're not gonna let you in some side little circle. We're gonna treat you and love you the same way before or after you come to know Christ. I'm just gonna tell you, it's Christ that's made the difference in our life. Not the steps you're about to walk through, not regeneration, not watermark, but it's Jesus. And he's alive, he's not dead. He has been risen from the grave and his spirit lives. And I have a personal relationship with him. And he walks with me and I abide with him. But it is a constant reminder. And so let me just tell you what we're all in the middle of here. Rescue's a one-time thing. I've been rescued. But recovery is a lifetime process. And here's the thing. I'm not here with you guys most Monday nights, but I'm doing the same things you're learning to do here all the time. And it's because I'm doing the things that you're learning to do here all the time that I'm not here with just guilt and shame and moments of failure and deep brokenness and pain. One of the amazing joys in my life is because I've walked with Jesus by and large for the last 3 decades, is I have a marriage that really works, a wife that really does love me, that I work through all kinds of conflict with all the time. I have kids that are blowing my phone up saying, "Dad, what time are we going to eat tonight?" Adult children who want to be with me. Because they're largely poor and they know I'll feed them. But look, we all have got friends. I don't care what he's serving. I'm not going to his crib, all right? Like, because you're just an idiot and a jerk and you're painful. And my kids, by the grace of God, you know, they really do. We love each other. And that's because of Christ. But here's the deal. I'm going to give you this little story. This is my story, and then we're done. When I was a single man, I didn't get married till I was almost 28. And when I was single, I bought a dog, and it was a golden retriever. But don't think stupid blonde, you know, golden retriever. It's called a dark golden. It's bred. It comes from a Nova Scotian duck trolling retriever, and it's bred to be athletic. It's got a big box head. It looks like it could talk. You know, I mean, it's just a strong, athletic field dog, and he was smart, and I hung out with him all the time. I never put him on the leash, but that dog was absolutely bound to me. He could do all kinds of things. I actually used him as an illustration. I mean, I would go to crowded restaurants. I would tell him to sit down and stay outside. I could go inside, and I know that unless somebody physically moved him, he wasn't going anywhere. I taught him. I don't know. I mean, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s. There was a beer commercial for Stroh's beer that I was watching on TV one day. There was a dog on there named Alex, and the guy was telling Alex to do all this different stuff, and then the commercial ended. You remember this commercial? He said, "Alex, fetch me a cold one." And Alex, who does everything he asks him to do, goes in, he opens the refrigerator, and he doesn't come back. And you hear him, you know, like, this dog is so obedient, he'll do anything, but he just can't bring you the Stroh's because it's so good he's gonna drink it. That was kind of the idea in the commercial. But I thought, how great would that be if you taught a dog to do that? And so I did. I taught Caleb to fetch me a cold one. I love Mountain Dew, and so I would have it in the fridge, and I would just say, "Fetch me a cold one." It was kind of a party trick, okay? And he would go in. I had a sock tied around the door. That's how I did it. And he would pull the sock, and the Mountain Dew was on a lower level, and he would take it and put it in his mouth with a good soft mouth, but enough to hold it, and then nose the door shut, and he would walk in, he'd sit down, he'd put it at my feet. I mean, it got me married, basically. It was a great party trick, all right? But he would do that kind of stuff. He was an amazing dog, okay? Now, here's what I want to tell you, okay? And this is why you've got to learn. This is why we're going to work through discipleship, because some of us are going to be here, and some of us are going to be so broken that we're going to say, I'm like that little sinner in Jesus' story who just said, "I need your help." And he's going to say, "I'd love to help you." And you're going to say, "Lord, would you rescue me?" And he said, "I'd love to rescue you." That's a one-time act. But here's the thing. Once he rescues you from the domain of sin and the power of who you're currently in bondage to, right, because you're already a slave. You're a slave right now to the course of this world. You're a slave to your flesh, which is corrupted because it's not following after Christ. You come from a line of sinners. We're all born into that family. And so we choose to not follow God, and our flesh longs for other things, and the course of our world, which doesn't honor God, pulls us in other things. And there's an enemy who's orchestrating the whole thing who tells us that this is really working out. It's not as bad as you think you would. Okay, that was a bad road, but let's go down this road. Or let's just plow this new road together. And so we're always like thinking we got it figured out again and again and again. And so we're in bondage to sin and death because we're convinced that God's not good. or we're enslaved to some system that men have invented that God's good and you better at least appease him with religious activity and hopefully that's good enough. And that's a lie. But there's a God that's rescued us and who's paid for our sin and who died for us to show us what holy love looks like, that you would demonstrate that love and that while you're still a sinner, Christ died for you. And that's what he did. And so because he did that, we're gonna say, okay, Lord, I'm done and I'm gonna follow you. Will you forgive me? Oh man, I hang out with people who ask for forgiveness. I save people who want to be forgiven. That's why I'm here. I'm a divine physician. You're sick and tired of being sick and tired, come here. That's rescue. But watch this, back to Caleb. Imagine, if you will, and I wasn't, but imagine I was an abusive owner. Imagine that Caleb had been taunted by me and beaten by me. And the reason he did these things is because I was cruel and oppressive. I kept him alive, but I intimidated him. I shocked him. I threatened him. I bullied him. And that dog knew my voice. I mean, Caleb, you could put any other person around him. I would use as an illustration, I'd put him up here and I'd tell him to sit. And I'd take, you know, either a hunting dummy or a tennis ball or something, and I'd throw it over there and he'd love to retrieve. And I would just throw it and I would walk away and I'd get a beautiful gal up there to come and try and sweet talk him. I'd get strong guys up there and try and intimidate him. And I'd get rich guys up there who would, you know, I'd have people up there, I'd give him steak or whatever. They thought a dog would move to try and get him to listen to them. And he would not listen to anybody. He'd listen to one thing and that was my voice. And what was so funny is every time Caleb in those little illustrations was, these people would say stuff to him. I said, the only rule was you couldn't touch him because touch establishes trust, okay? And I said, you know, he knows if I let you touch him that there's a relationship there, okay? And so don't touch him, but do anything else. And what Caleb would do every time is when these people were trying to get him to go do something I had told him not to do yet, he would just, eventually, he would always just look for me. He would turn his eyes towards me. And he'd try and find me, you know? And they'd just look at me like, okay, there you are. I know when it's time, you'll let me go. Okay, but imagine I was abusive to that dog, and the reason he didn't go is because he knew that if he went without me telling him, I was gonna shock the crud out of him 3 steps into it and make him miserable, and nobody could do anything about it because it's my dog. And imagine somebody, whether it's beautiful or strong or very rich, came up to me and just said, Ted, I'm gonna rescue that dog from you. And they waved enough money in front of me, okay, that I go, all right, I'm in. How much? We used to be able to say $1 million and that would impress us. $1 billion. For that dog? Sold. And you bought that dog. You redeemed him from me, his master that has oppressed him, intimidated him. Imagine the next day, he's your dog by law. The next day, that dog is in your front yard and I walk down the street and I see that dog. And I whistle him up with that whistle that he knows I whistle. And that voice speaks and says, come over yonder, dog, you know? And I call his name and he hears that voice. What do you think everything in that dog's flesh is gonna wanna do? I mean, intellectually, if dogs could understand, you know, human financial transactions, he knows he's free. His dog tag had been changed from my name to yours. He knows it's his yard. I can't go in that yard or you'll beat me up. I can't trespass. But if I whistle him, what do you think everything in that dog's fiber of being is gonna wanna do? It's gonna wanna come with me, isn't it? Because he was trained to do it. His whole life, he's listened to that voice. See, here's the thing, man. Rescue is a one-time deal. But recovery is a lifetime. Because I've listened for a long time to another voice that I just followed that was very familiar to my flesh and made sense to my flesh. And so don't be disheartened if every now and then you're going, why is my flesh walking back over here? I know I've been set free. I know there's a loving God who's saying, hey, that's not what you want. There's not life over there. Then you go, well, how come if I say I love you, do I want to go over there so much? It's because, man, for 4 decades, you live with that master. You know that voice. It seems like right to you, and you've got to be reparented. You've got to learn other ways. You've got to learn to walk with me. This is the truth that will set you free. It's not a power problem. It's a truth problem. And so we're gonna work steps, which is just basically discipleship. It's gonna explain to you and remind you of things that are true, that as you walk in that truth through these steps, broken and contrite people, where God meets you and rescues you, you've got to walk with him. And guess what? There's gonna be your best day. Some days where that old whistle comes and you might find yourself back over there again, getting kicked and beat up. But bro, just because you went doesn't mean that's your owner. You're still the redeemed owner's dog. and he can come and rescue you again. And let's go, let's learn my voice. And the longer you walk with him, the more you'll learn his voice, the more you'll listen to his voice, and the more you'll have evidence that he is a good owner, not just the next one that's gonna beat me. He's the one that set me free. And so that's why we do the steps, okay? It's learning the new master's voice. That's why we sing. We're reminding ourselves of the new master's beauty. We're learning to follow our father. Kids without dads are vulnerable. And God wants to rescue you in your hurt. And I'm so glad you're here. And I pray that I walk with you every day through these steps of life. And I pray that what God will do is he'll allow us to go bark to other dogs and go, hey man, I know somebody that'll buy you from that bondage you're in. I used to get kicked like you're getting kicked. I used to have mange like you've got mange. I know you can't believe it because I'm all showered up and clean, but let me just show you some pictures. Let me tell you my story. I was owned by that same master. This guy set me free. Come on. That's who we are. We're a bunch of dead dogs who have been redeemed, who are learning a new voice. And we're encouraging each other. And it doesn't surprise us every now and then. Dogs sometimes return to vomit. But the more they learn their master, they go, I'm not eating that anymore because I know it's vomit. So we're glad you're here. And we love you. And we know that same owner that maybe you got mange from, who's shocking the crap out of you, who's left you with all kinds of scars and a limp, and we're just saying, we've been set free. Father, I pray that my very wise friends who are here, maybe broken, maybe walking with a limp, maybe filled with mange and the fleas of self-will and self-dependence, I pray they'd be rescued tonight, that all they gotta do is just whimper out, oh man, this is a miserable existence. God, if you're there, would you redeem me? Could you rescue me from this owner? Are you really that loving? Are you really that much of a benefactor and giver that you would give for me what it is required for me to be rescued? And Lord, I thank you that myself and hundreds of other leaders in this room are here saying, oh yeah, man, it's true. It's true. He can redeem you and rescue you. And we're recovering. I thank you that for a long time, Lord, you've taught me your voice to where now that old owner, my flesh still responds a little bit, but man, my flesh has also been trained about how good you are. So I walk with you with a little bit more ease, always scared to death that old familiar voice will get me. So I rehearse things all the time. I remind myself and read your word and hear your word and hear your voice so that I don't go back to that vomit, to getting beaten again. Thank you that you love us. That you're going to love us, not because we never leave your yard again. You love us because you love us. But Lord, I pray that we would live in the kingdom of your grace enough that other people would see that they too can be set free and would want to come and follow you. And I pray you'd start with somebody tonight. Somebody would get rescued tonight. Somebody would say, come get me, Lord. I'm not holy, but I will bark out my contrition. Will you forgive me for the mange that I drug into my life? Would you cleanse me? Would you make me whole? Would you teach me your voice? Father, help us to be those people who know your voice and who share your goodness with others. Help us to now, being rescued, to walk in recovery until we're home with you forever. In Jesus' name.